You're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Urban Connections. I'm your host, Donna Morrow Wolf. Our guest is in studio alongside our co-host, Joe Jackson. But first, I would like to thank Mitty Tuke for her generous donation in the last hour, supporting KKFI's community radio station and the program Every Woman. We appreciate each and everyone who calls in or logs in to kkfi.org to make a pledge of support for community radio, which is free speech radio here in Kansas City. We have this 100,000-watt megaphone, 100,000 watts of people power that is listener supported, a place where the news and views and information that's pertinent to what's going on in our society gets to you uncut, unfiltered, not like you hear it on a lot of the mainstream media programs. So this is our winter 2017 pledge drive. We need your support, as we have gotten your support for the last 25 plus years here at KKFI. We have volunteers online to take your pledge of support. The number to call is 888-931-0901. That's 888-931-0901. You can also pledge securely at our website at kkfi.org. I wanted to mention, before we get into the body of our program, some breaking news and information that's out now regarding the Emmett Till case that happened back in 1955, that infamous murder of a young man from Chicago who happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time visiting his family in Mississippi. The woman at the center of the case, whose testimony was given unofficially. It was leaked to the press and to the people there, but she gave testimony that greatly influenced the outcome of the case, and she was at the center of it. It's Carolyn Bryant was her name. She has now recanted her story and now says that these events that were such an outrage to her and offense to her husband and her brother-in-law that and inspired them to murder and torture Emmett Till. She says none of that was true. She was not verbally or in any other way assaulted by Emmett Till. More on that later. But we want to continue now in our series on how to buy a house, facilitated by our own Joe Jackson, who has invited Beverly Easterwood here to share her knowledge with us. Joe?
Ms. Easterwood is an appraiser, and the appraisal of your property is one thing that can make or break the deal. So it's the one thing, absent your credit, absent your ability to get financing, that if the house doesn't appraise for what you need it to, you're buying it for, you won't be able to buy it unless you end up putting more money down. So, Mr. Easterwood, if you can tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been appraising houses.
Thank you for inviting me today. I appreciate this opportunity to be able to provide information to potential home buyers and the general public in general. I've been doing appraisals for over 30 years. Of course, I started when I was a mere child. I do all types of appraisals. I do single-family residential. I do commercial appraisals, multifamily. I do right-of-way appraisals for cities. That's one type of appraisal that people may have encountered if the city is about to widen your street and need to take 10 feet off the front of your property. They have to have an appraisal done in order to be able to tell you how much to pay for that 10 feet that they're taking. So that's one type of appraisal. Another type of appraisal is for tax purposes. Any homeowner that gets their real estate tax bill is aware that their taxes are based upon the value of their property. Of course, the county goes through what they call a mass appraisal process, which is not the same as an individual fee appraiser coming out and doing appraisal on your property. So I do those types of appraisals. I've done appeals for property owners when they wanted to appeal their taxes. And just pretty much the whole gamut of appraising. I didn't want to limit myself in terms of, you know, this market went dry.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be able to move to another market.
Yeah, you didn't want all your eggs in one basket.
Exactly.
Exactly. That's wonderful. Hey, Joe, could you recap for our listeners all the steps that we have covered so far in how to buy a home?
Sure. Week one has been the pre-qualification, which is the most important thing that you need to do before you even start to look for a house. Then week two was the importance of your agent and how to work with your agent. There are different types of agents. There's buyer's agents, there's seller's agents. And in some cases, they have what's called a dual agent. And then week three was the importance of that property inspection, ensuring that you have that property appraised so that when you go to buy it, you know the condition of the roof, the condition of mechanicals, all those different things. And now we're going to the appraisal, which can, as we said, make or break your deal.
One thing I'd like to point out is that the appraiser is an independent third party. We are governed by the Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice, which means that we cannot have a dog in the fight, in essence. We can't advocate for any particular value. What we do is an analysis of the market and what we look at the data. You know, what has sold in this area, how the property compares to the one that we're appraising, whether there's a difference in the number of bedrooms, a difference in the living area, a difference in the features. And sometimes we can't find a house that's like the one we're appraising in that same neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So we may have to go to a different neighborhood and look for a comp, because that's, sales does not always mean comparable.
Okay.
Ideally, we would like to find a comparable property in that same geographical area. But, for instance, if we got a brand new house in a neighborhood of 100-year-old houses, the house that sold down the street is not necessarily a comparable,
mm-hmm.
unless
mm-hmm.
it's brand new just like it. So what you're looking then for is a house that the buyer of that house would buy.
Hmm,
you
okay.
know, the potential buyer.
Mm-hmm.
If he's looking at this house, this brand new house in this neighborhood of 100-year-old houses, where else would he look to buy a house like the one that's under contract?
What are some features in a house that add value to it, you know, irregardless of what neighborhood it's in and the comparables? But what are some of the features that add value to a house?
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of people say, well, I spent $10,000 putting on a new roof. So when they sell that house, they want their $10,000 back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how many people are going to buy a house without a roof? You know, so
some Uber do-it-yourselfer or something like that, maybe.
So the improvements, of course, will be taken into consideration. The new things that are done to a house will be taken into consideration, but it may be may not be a dollar for dollar return on what that improvement is. But the things that have been found to return the most or provide the most return on the investment have been bathroom remodels, kitchen remodels, number one,
okay.
but bathroom remodels. But then you also have to look at where the geographical area is. For instance, they said, there was a study I looked at that said a basement remodel in Hawaii would return over 100% of the investment,
really?
Whereas in the Midwest, it may only be 50%. Return on investment.
How do you account for that difference?
It just depends on what is needed or what is most common in that market. A swimming pool in Phoenix would be much more desirable because of 100-degree
yeah. yeah.
temperature around almost year-round than a swimming pool here. It would give you some value, but not the same return as one would there, because it's more typical to see a swimming pool
in Phoenix.
Phoenix than it is in Kansas.
Closer to being a necessity in Phoenix.
Exactly.
So what are the hottest areas in the country? Are you aware of, you know, appraising houses? What's the hottest market right now?
Well, San Francisco.
Oh, really? Okay.
San Francisco. A lot of the markets that went down mm-hmm. a few years ago mm-hmm. during the financial crisis have rebounded. I have friends in Miami now that say they don't have any inventory. I have friends in Houston mm-hmm. that say they don't have any inventory in certain price ranges.
Okay.
They may, like for us, the $200,000 market, they don't have any inventory in that price range. They may have a $400,000 or $500,000 inventory because it's not as many buyers okay. in that price range.
We can see that. Go ahead, Joe.
So we had talked about what are the steps. What steps do you take when you start to do an appraisal, and how long does an appraisal take?
That's a good question.
You know what, Beverly? Let's pause and do our station break,
okay.
and then we can talk interrupted for a longer period of time,
okay.
and we'll come back and talk about the steps to go through for an appraisal. And they're in the room with a note that says Keith loves community radio and would like people to match his donation up to $100. Thank you so much, Keith, for your support of community radio. Y'all hear that? Keith will match your donation up to $100. So this is a wonderful time to call to show your support for community radio here at 90.1 FM. And the number to call is 888-931-0901. Our pledge phone answerers are busy, but not busy enough. We got space, we got capacity. Give us a call now at 888-931-0901 or go online at kkfi.org. Now hold on, because we'll be back to Urban Connections right after this message.
Do you need health insurance or want to change your existing coverage? Plans are changing, so make sure your coverage meets your family's needs. Not sure where to start? Trained counselors can help you compare plans and see if you're eligible for financial assistance. The deadline to sign up for 2017 coverage is January 31st. Need help? You can contact United Way by telephone at 211 or visit coverkc.org.
FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, Urban Connections, with your host, Donna Wolf. Our co-host, Joe Jackson, is in studio alongside our guest, appraiser, real estate appraiser, Beverly Eastwood, as Urban Connections continues on its series of how to buy a house. The question on the table from Joe Jackson was, what are the steps to getting an appraisal?
And how long does it take?
Okay.
The first thing I do when I get an assignment is I look it up in the county records to get whatever information the county has on it. And I try to find comps before I go out to the property. But sometimes when I get to the field, I find out that the information in the county was not correct, so I may have to make some adjustments in my search. But when you get to the property, I measure the outside, make notes about the materials and any repairs that may need to be done. Then I go inside and I do an analysis of what's on the interior, how many bedrooms, how many baths. I do a sketch of the interior floor plan and make notes about the types of finishes, whether it's a hardwood floor or carpet, that type of thing. And make notes about the condition of the property. Then, depending on whether or not my comps are good enough, I go ahead and take pictures of the comps while I'm out in the field, and go back, take all that information back to the office, and pull the detailed information on the comps and do an analysis of the appraisal of the comparison of the comps to the subject. And that process takes me to a final value conclusion. How long does that take? It just depends. depends on what else is already in the pipeline. Depends on whether I need to go back and make some, you know, find some more comps and go back into the field. But generally, we give a turnaround time of about a week on a single family. Again, depending upon what's already on my desk.
So is this a function of something that the potential buyer does, Joe, in obtaining their mortgage, or how does that
this
go?
This is a thing where you have to come out of your pocket for about $500, and then you are told, you know...
You, the buyer.
In some cases, the bank will pay for it. If you're doing a refinance, the bank may pay for it as a part of that and roll it in back into your closing costs. But the buyer has to come out of their pocket for about $500 that is non-refundable. You know, even if you decide not to buy the house, you've paid for the appraisal. If something goes through, like just last week, President Trump signed the order with the mortgage, stopping mortgage insurance premiums. People that have paid for appraisals that now can't qualify for the mortgage have just lost $500.
Special. Yeah.
Yes, and that's why mortgage and brokerages across the nation were scrambling to get it in effect, because it went into effect yesterday. So a lot of people were scrambling, just trying to get people to be able to meet that deadline that they could close. If not, they had to go back and be requoted. And if it exceeded the amount that they could afford every month, then they had either kind of come back with more money down payment to the table, or find some way to be able to get that within the pre-approved number that they've been pre-approved for.
So what if your house happens to appraise for higher than the mortgage that you are seeking, or higher than the price that the seller is asking for? How often does that happen?
It happens sometimes. And that's a good thing for the buyer, because
sure,
it means he's got built-in equity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The mortgage company wants to make sure that their investment is protected, and that's the primary reason for that. And it's also a good thing, though, for the buyer, because the buyer doesn't want to pay more for the house than it's
actually
worth.
Correct.
Let's ask this question. What happens if you have a lower appraisal then on your home purchase, and it's also below the purchase price? What happens in that aspect?
Then the buyer and the seller have to negotiate. And then, depending on whether or not the lender will loan on that, that's a lender question, though.
So that's in the situation. It could impact, say, if it comes in $10,000 below, then the buyer may agree to come down $5,000, the seller may go up $5,000 to be able to get that particular contract done.
Yeah, they may renegotiate to save the deal.
So it's one of those things where you have to really look at it. How important is it when you're selling a house to do your own sponsored appraisal before you actually put your house on the market?
A lot of times, I've had sellers call me and ask me to do an appraisal on their property before they sell it, and I ask them, "Are you going to list it with the real estate agent, or are you going to try to sell it yourself?" Because if you list it with the real estate professional, they will do what's called a CMA, or competitive market analysis. That, in essence, is I'm not going to call it a mini appraisal, but that's sort of what it is. It's analysis of listings that are comparable to the subject, as well as recent sales that have taken place, that the agent uses to come up with a price recommendation for the seller to list the property at. So it's a way for the seller to get an assessment of what the list price should be, mm-hmm. so that it's not so far out of the market when the time comes for an appraisal to be done.
Yeah, you can underprice or overprice yourself right out of the market. That's some breaking news. George just called in and matched the $100 pledge challenge that Keith put out there a few minutes ago. And George, thank you so much for your generous contribution. We got a challenge still on the table. Let me do my note. From Keith, who's going to match up to $100 if you donate to KKFI. George, thank you so much for your pledge, and George would like to thank all the KKFI people. So that means everybody who's in this building, all our programmers, all of our volunteers, keeping community radio alive and strong here in Kansas City. You can join that party. Give us a call at 888-931-0901. That's our pledge line number, 888-931-0901. Volunteers are standing by to take your call. You can also pledge securely always, anytime, day or night, at www.kkfi.org. So I've got a question for you, Beverly, our real estate appraiser. How does one go about finding a good, real, true, bona fide real estate appraiser that they can rely on?
One way is to look on the website for each state, whatever state your property is located at.
What website would that be?
The one for Missouri, you can just Google Missouri Real Estate Appraisal Board.
Okay.
And in Kansas, it's the Kansas Real Estate. No, let's see. It's in Kansas. Missouri is Missouri Real Estate Appraisal Commission. And in Kansas is the Kansas Real Estate Appraisal Board.
Okay.
And there's a list of appraisers. I think you can search by city, by name. But, you know, if you don't know what you're looking for, you would search by city or county.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll give you a list of appraisers. Another way you can do it is go by word of mouth. You know, recommendations from other people that you have, know have gone through that process.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about it, though, is that when you're going through the mortgage lending process, you can't pick your own appraiser.
You cannot.
Cannot. It's.
Well, that sounds like an opportunity for some kind of collusion or something. Who chooses for you?
The bank actually chooses for you, and as a result of the market crash, the Dodd-Frank rule says that you cannot. There were so many people doing handshake transactions that they sent a buddy out. I needed to praise for this, and your house would come in for that.
Okay.
So now the Dodd-Frank says that you cannot have any, you can't have any knowledge, you can't have any type of interaction with anybody. All you do is you pay your money, and the bank has a list. There are a few issues to that. You can ask your bank if they have somebody who is knowledgeable of doing properties in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's something that they can look at. They can look at it. They don't have to approve it.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, you have no interaction with whoever does your appraisal.
And some lenders go strictly through an appraisal management company.
Maybe.
So
it's
a new industry.
Mm-hmm.
It's appraisal. They call them AMCs. But they are sometimes local, sometimes national companies that hire appraisers.
Okay.
They have a panel. Okay. Of appraisers, and they will contact appraisers in various locations depending upon where the assignment is located.
Oh, I see. Sort of like an appraiser's pool.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
So if I have done my own appraisal on my house, is my bank in any way honored? Do they have to do to honor that, or are they going to sit and they should tell me that what that was my appraisal paid for by me, and if they still have to have their own appraisal, correct?
Correct.
So we know that if you're getting ready to sell your house and you may paint a room, put in a new toilet, put in a new vanity, you know, to increase the value, are there any steps that a person can do to prepare for an appraisal?
The one thing they should do is make sure that the appraiser knows any improvements that they have made to the property, because they're not always visible. But just make it as accessible as possible. You know, don't like, for instance,
have a mattress on your front porch across the front door or something like that.
Excuse me. Yeah, it'd be good if it's not an obstacle course when you're going in. So. Yeah. But no, you know, I mean, the appraiser is you know, we've seen all types of situations, so, you know, we're not shocked by anything, but the easier it is to get around and see things, because we have to assess the condition. If you've got, you know, everything covered up, we can't see the condition of the property. And I'd just say, if, you know, let the appraiser know anything that you've done to the property, make it accessible. And if the agent has sales or comps that they would like the appraiser to be aware of, they could provide those to the appraiser.
So sometimes it kind of pays to do your own homework. When we start looking at value, and I know there's Trulia has a value, Google has a value, all these different places have a value, how close are those values to what people actually get there for their home appraisal? Because I know people say, oh, well, I looked at homebuyers.com and they said my house should be worth $250,000, and then they get back the appraisal and it's only worth $175,000. You know, what's the best way if you want to try to find, as they say, a windshield value for your house that you can do that? What sites can people use?
And then that also depends on at what time that homeowner is looking for an appraisal, because for property tax purposes, I'd rather my house be valued at $175,000 than $250,000.
Correct.
Let me make a note about that, because I used to be on the Board of Tax Appeals, and so I would, you know, conduct hearings with people that were contesting their county's appraised value.
Mm-hmm.
And out of all the people that ever came through, I had one lady come through and said, my value's too low. I
really?
Want you to raise my value. Because she thought it would be taken into consideration if she ever decided to sell her house.
Uh-huh.
Which it will not.
Okay.
The only purpose for that appraisal is for your taxes. So if you don't agree with it, if you think it's too high, appeal it. You know, and because you can't appeal your taxes. You can appeal your value,
right?
That your taxes are based on.
So you're still obligated to pay whatever the county has assessed as the value of your home. But then you can go and do your own research, come up with documentation to prove that this is an incorrect valuation, and my taxes should be lower. But the obligation still rests with the homeowner, to pay those property taxes. We'd like to give you, our listeners, a chance to join our conversation here with Beverly Easterwood, who is a real estate appraiser, part of Urban Connections series on how to buy a home. I'm going to give you the number to the pledge line to call first, though, before you call the on-air line, because we're in the middle of our winter 2017 pledge here at Pledge Drive here at KKFI. KKFI is a 100,000-watt community radio station licensed by the Federal Communications Commission to broadcast at the 90.1 FM mark on your radio dial. We are listener supported, and we've been on the air since 1988. We're famous for bringing news and information and music and culture from our area, from our region, from our nation, from our globe, stuff you're just not going to hear anyplace else other than right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your very own community radio station. So we need your support. We need your continued support. There's a challenge on the table. If you donate up to $100, your pledge will be matched. And we got folks in studio here. Is this from you, Jim? Oh, oh, Blake, bless you. We got folks in the studio supporting. Thank you so much for your generous donation. The number to call is 888-931-0901. 888-931-0901 to make your pledge. But if you got a question or a comment for our guest, Beverly Easterwood, real estate appraiser, call us in the studio at 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI, 5534. And Joe, talk while I handle this. Bring this phone call in.
Sure.
Hold on.
One thing I wanted to say about what property owners should take into consideration is if they decide that one day, I think I want a family room, so I'm going to take half of my two-car garage and turn that one side into a family room.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm single. I don't have the one car. So, you know, I'm going to change that to a family room. But if all the other comparables in your area have two-car garages, you will pay for that for that change somewhere okay. down the line.
That makes sense.
Number one, you may not get the money that you spent to convert it. And then number two, you may receive a reduced offer because
you only got a one-car garage.
Correct.
I know as we look at some of the houses out south that were starter houses after World War II, they were built two-bedroom houses, one bath, and then they had one-car garages. And now you go back into the same neighborhoods, those one-car garages have been removed and turned into a bedroom.
With
so,
second bath, I would wager.
No, most likely. A lot of them just still have that same one bath. They just add an additional bedroom to be able to have an office or a den. So now they've actually changed their appraisal. And while a bedroom may have more value, they missed the garage, which then all that money comes out.
Well, let's see what our caller is curious about. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
You're on the air at 90.1 FM. Please tell us your name and what part of town you're calling from.
This is Bingo calling in from Waldo. I'm a regular listener to your show.
Alrighty, Bingo. What's your question or comment?
Well, if it's all right with you, I'm just going to pay you a compliment. A while back, a guy called in. He was traveling through town, he said, with his wife. And he called into the show and asked you what your worldview was, and you said something like, well, we're just having a chat. People call in. And he said something like, that's what America needs more of, people just talking to each other. And so that's what I appreciate the most about your show is you're engaging in just plain old-fashioned conversation. It's not blessed by anyone or anything, not directed by anyone or anything. So I thought that call was a great compliment to both you and Joe. And I enjoyed being able to participate in the show as a listener and a caller. And I like that you both try to stay pragmatic and practical and try to stick to what's here in front of us and focus on what we really need to deal with here, the conditions on the ground, and not some kind of dreamy utopia as we wish we're here, and identify resources people can actually use. So I just wanted to say that. Congratulations on your recent awards, and let's keep going strong into the new year.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that because we do aim for an organic exchange of ideas and information here at 90.1 FM on Urban Connection Show. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you, our listeners. 816-931-5534. 816-931-KKFI. Joe?
So now that I've gotten that appraisal, it's come back and I'm ready now to make that negotiations with the individual who's selling a house. What is the most important thing that you've put on the appraisal that I really need to know? Is it the value of the house, or is it certain conditions and things that you may have noted? Or even in some cases, if the seller advertised the house as, say, having 1,500 square feet and you came in and found out that it only had 1,200 square feet, you know, those are important things. What's most important on the appraisal that a listener should be saying, okay, when I get my appraisal, this is what I really need to look at or read?
I would say that you want to look at the features of the house, like you mentioned, the square footage, bedroom count. And because a lot of real estate agents will count a basement bedroom as a bedroom in their room count, whereas the appraiser cannot count that in the room count.
That's interesting.
Not the above ground living area.
Hmm.
We will consider the fact that there is a finished basement and give it value on that line.
Mm-hmm.
But in the line where it says gross living area and room count, that's all above ground. The basement bedroom would be assessed or now analyzed on the bedroom line item. Basement line item.
That's interesting. Give us a call with your questions here in studio at 816-931-5534. 816-931-KKFI if you have a question for Beverly Easterwood. Go,
so
Joe.
A lot of people don't know that you have if they're counted as a bedroom, it must have a closet. So I know I've heard people, well, you've got the wardrobe over there. It has to have a built-in closet in order to be counted as a bedroom. So that's why it's important, as you just said, to check what they're saying, because if somebody's went in and counted that wardrobe, then that wardrobe is not actually a bedroom, because it doesn't have a fixed built-in closet.
Correct. It has to have a closet, and it has to have a window.
A closet and a window?
Window.
Because, to be a full bedroom.
Yes, because there has to be access to the outside in the event of a fire or something of that nature.
Okay.
And if it's in the basement, it has to be so many inches, but then the window has to be within so many inches of the floor. So there's a lot of little nuances that we have to take into consideration.
What about attic space? What if someone has finished their attic and they have put windows up there and a bathroom and a closet? How is that space then counted versus how it is as an attic?
It could be counted as long as the headroom is over 6.5 feet.
6.5 feet.
And it's got to be heated. So that could be included in your living area, because there are a lot of older houses that have finished attics.
Mm-hmm.
Where the space is included in the living area.
Can you talk to us about the difference in value of different materials that houses are composed of, like vinyl siding versus aluminum siding, a brick front versus a stucco front? Talk about the differences in building materials.
The way I usually look at it is it maintenance-free? You know, when I start making adjustments, it's because this brick siding is not going to require any exterior maintenance other than periodic tuck pointing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you've got a wood siding or a masonite siding, you're going to have to paint it every so often.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in vinyl siding and steel. I don't really get into the... I don't see any big major difference between those two, if it's some type of no maintenance or low maintenance siding.
Mm-hmm.
Those are where I start making adjustments is for that type of finish.
And now what about dangerous building materials that a house might have, or risky materials that a house might be composed of, like wood shingle roofs and things like that, wood shingle siding, things like that? How does that impact the value of the appraisal?
Now, usually, the way adjustments are made are based upon the market. How's the market going to react to that? We would need to see they call it paired sales, which is ideally the way that most, or if not all, adjustments would be made. But the reality is that it's not always possible to get paired sales in order to be able to determine every adjustment. What I mean by paired sales is that if you took two houses side by side, the same in all respects except for one thing,
mm-hmm.
Say it's number of bedrooms. One house has three bedrooms, other house has two bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a $5,000 difference between those two houses, then we would attribute that difference to that one bedroom.
I see.
And that's what they call paired sales. So if you find, you'd have to go through and find paired sales for everything. Paired sales for roof types, mm-hmm. paired sales for basement, paired sales for number of garages. You know, but like I said, in reality, that's very difficult, you know, to achieve. So a lot of times adjustments are based upon the person's experience mm-hmm. and knowledge, you know, gained from other real estate professionals.
So how much of an impact does the area, the neighborhood that a house is sitting in, how much of an impact does that have on the value? Is my vinyl siding worth as much in the 3rd District as it is in, you know, the Kansas City's 3rd District as it is in Kansas City's 1st or 2nd District, for example?
Again, you'd have to look at the sales in the market. And you have to have, sometimes we're kind of like detectives. We have to try to go through and find out, well, why did this sell for this much money? You know, why was there anything, you know, any extenuating circumstances? Was there, you know, was a seller selling under distress? You know, was it a divorce and they didn't care, they just wanted to get rid of it?
Okay.
You know, so you have to try to make sure that you're getting real market sales, that somebody put a sale a sign in the yard. Several people looked at it, you know, and this was the offer that came in. No pressure, no extenuating circumstances. So those are the sales that you try to look at mm-hmm. when you're doing an appraisal. And if all the sales over here are selling for this amount of money, or all the properties over here are selling for this amount of money, and all the sales over in this district are selling for a certain amount of money, then you're basing your appraisal on historical data.
Joe, you were shaking your head during that question, so just go ahead and spit it out, Joe.
No, it's just the one thing in real estate is location, 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 location. So if you were to take a house that's in the 3rd District and move it to the 1st District, the value of the house would automatically, in some cases, almost triple, just based on...
You didn't even say double. You said triple.
Just based on the location. I can say that because I live in a historic neighborhood, and the houses in my neighborhood are 2,000 to 3,000 square foot. And in our neighborhood, while they may sell for $60,000, $70,000, if we move those same houses just a little bit to the west, to say Hyde Park or to the Brookside Waldo, mm-hmm. you're now looking at a house that's worth almost $300,000.
Wow.
So
why don't you move one of your houses put it on one of those things and move it on over there, Jeff?
You just look at what it is. So, like I said, it just all depends on where you're at and where you buy. And that was leading into our next question. When you start to look at historical properties, how do they appraise any different? I know, because if you go to Waldo, if you go to down by the R.H. Long Mansion in Gladstone area, where you've got all the nice, in some cases, those houses are $1 million, how does that impact a neighborhood and also the price of the appraisal?
The appraisal is not based upon the value. We can't do that. The appraisal is based upon the amount of time that's taken, you know, that's going to be required in order to do that, go through the process and arrive at that value. But in terms of historical properties, you can't just off the top of your head say this is going to be worth this much money because it's a historical property. Because sometimes historical properties require that you do certain things. They limit you in terms of what you can do, in terms of improvements to the property.
What kind of limits might you face with a historical property?
One thing is windows. That's the big thing.
Roofs. We had a church in our neighborhood. They had the old tile roof, and to replace that tile roof was going to cost them $300,000, and they had to go through the Historical Preservation Society to say that's not economically feasible to put a $300,000 roof on. So then they had to get a waiver for a composite type roof that would have cost them maybe only $30,000. Windows, the improvements that you can make to the outside, you can't. If you live in a historic neighborhood, you cannot make any modifications to the exterior of the property that would change its historic designation.
That's what I was driving at. What is, you know, there's probably, it sounds like there's a thin line between having a historic property and keeping it an historic property and also maintaining it in a way that will allow it to continue to be a viable property.
That's true, and what a lot of people in Kansas City don't understand is there are two historic designations. One is a national historic designation. The other is a local historic designation. The local historic designation is significantly more stringent than the national registration, because with local, they can look at your windows, the color paint that you put on there, the type of materials that you may put on there, whether the driveway is asphalt or concrete, and what you go back with it. They can require that you go back with like kind materials that can cost you more to be able to do it. So it's all those different things. Now, if you're on a historical designation, then that's just saying that events...
Something happened here.
Exactly. Events, say the type of housing, that is what drives that, but you are less... You can make more changes. If you wanted to paint your house purple, you could paint it purple. You know, you could change the windows if you wanted to. So that's one of the things that when you begin to look at buying a house, definitely see what neighborhood you're in, because you start buying a house in a different neighborhood where it's historically designated, you have to keep the house to those particular standards.
So I might have to have a cobblestone driveway or something like that to keep my local historical designation. One more time, I want to remind our listeners that this is our Winter 2017 Pledge Drive here at KKFI 90.1 FM, your 100,000-watt community radio station that you've been supporting since 1988. It's time to step up to the plate again to make sure that this hugely valuable community asset remains viable and strong. We encourage you to go to your phone right now and give us a call at 888-931-0901. That's 888-931-0901, or online securely 24/7 at kkfi.org. We got folks, volunteers standing by right now to answer your call real time at 888-931-0901. And thank you very much to our guest, Beverly Easterwood, for her generous donation to the cause here today. Thanks, Beverly.
You're welcome.
Jeff?
So, as this series comes to a close, it's been a labor of love, but the last part of it is going to be next week at the Mohart Center, when people can come out and actually see the people that they've heard on the radio. And add to that, there's going to be that home maintenance fair, which is really important, ways that you can find out about free weatherization, free windows from the Kansas City Lead Program, you know, to find out about the HERO program, which will let you make modifications to your home that are energy efficient, that are paid back through your property taxes. And this is something that's just open to homeowners, because it's open to businesses for a while. But the important part about this is all free. Next Saturday, February the 4th, the vendor fair area opens at 9 a.m. in the morning, from 9 to 10. Then we're going to have a panel discussion with the guests that you've heard on the radio, and the vendor area will open back up from about 11:50 till about 1 o'clock. And the Mohart Center is located at 3200 Wayne in Kansas City, Missouri. And this would not have been possible without the City of Kansas City partnering with Urban Connections to help us get the word out, because there are a lot of free services out there that people just don't know about it, that this is going to be a free event. And when you can see these services at one time, we're going to have banks, credit unions, we're going to have all different types of organizations. The Land Bank is going to be there, where people can find out about some of the homes that they're going to be putting out, but also, you know, how to maintain the house that you're living in, and things that you can do for low and no cost.
Okay, and again, that's taking place next Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
No, 9 to 1.
Oh, 9 to 1, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Robert J. Mohart Multipurpose Focus Center, formerly known as the Linwood Multipurpose Center. Okay. Joe, go ahead.
So I know we always give one thing that is happening in our community minute. Free Chinese New Year celebration tomorrow at the Nelson Atkins Museum from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. So this is Chinese New Year. And if you come out, there's going to be a free shuttle service from the Kauffman Foundation and Kauffman Gardens. And if you go to the Nelson Atkins building, the plaza level, Kirkwood Hall, there's going to be dance performances. There are going to be Chinese demonstrations. Students from the Chinese School of Greater Kansas City perform high energy tricks. And also there's going to be dance and drum performances, a cheer from the Lion Dancers from the Drum Roller, a fashion show from 1:35 to 1:50, and you can come out and listen to the music, the arts. There's going to be, Bo Ling's is going to be on site, and they're going to be giving out food that people can, you know, do different things with. So definitely it's something that go out. We always say if there's nothing to do in Kansas City that's free, this is something that's free.
All righty. Thank you so much, Joe. And thank you so much to Beverly Easterwood, our guest here, who is a certified real estate appraiser. Thanks for sharing your knowledge and expertise with us here today on Urban Connections, the last in our series on how to buy a home. Again, our pledge lines are open. It's our winter 2017 pledge drive. Show your support by picking up your phone and calling 888-931-0901. That's 888-931-0901. Or you may pledge securely online at www.kkfi.org. Is that doing it, Joe?
That's doing it. So we definitely hope people come out next week and you can find out a lot of different things. There's going to be some giveaways. Somebody's going to walk away with gift cards. Somebody's going to walk away with a free Nest thermostat boat valued at $250, and they're going to be able to find some great things to be able to do to maintain their homes.
You heard it here, 90.1 FM, KKFI, your very own community radio station. Now, please stay tuned at the top of the hour for Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson. Thanks, Beverly.
Thank you.